as Commissioner Phillips noted, in our international work, we deal with agencies that operate in a vast range of legal systems and economic systems with different histories and cultures and different levels of development. How does that affect our ability to cooperate and to promote what we view as good policy? To answer that, we start the day with a panel on the implications of different legal traditions and regimes for international cooperation. And to get that panel off to a great start, we're going to lead in with a presentation from the Deputy Assistant Attorney General of the U.S. Department of Justice for International Affairs, Roger Alford. Roger is not only an antitrust expert, but an international law scholar on leave from the faculty of Notre Dame Law School, where he is concurrent professor at the Keough School of Global Affairs and a faculty fellow at the Kellogg Institute for International Studies. Roger previously practiced with a law firm in Washington, D.C., and served as a legal advisor to the Claims Resolution Tribunal in Zurich, as a law clerk to Judge James Buckley of the D.C. Circuit, Court of Appeals, and to Judge Richard Allison of the Iran-United States Claims Tribunal in The Hague. I have had the great pleasure of working closely with Roger on our shared international antitrust projects, and I'm delighted to welcome him now to address our hearing. Roger?
Let me thank Randy and Bilal and all the others at the FTC for helping to organize this event, and I'm so thrilled that among the many roundtables and topics that you're focusing on, that you're spending 2 days on international engagement and cooperation. So I want to thank you, Randy and Bilal, for the chance to speak here with you today and to give the Department of Justice perspective. As all of you know, the DOJ and the FTC work extremely closely with one another in international arenas, and so we're constantly in discussions and dialogues and strategy sessions about how we should promote our shared values with respect to international engagement and cooperation. So thank you for the opportunity to be here. And I want to just say that I think these hearings are incredibly useful for engaging in serious reflection on broad issues of antitrust enforcement and will definitely help to promote sound antitrust policies. So the Antitrust Division is closely following the hearings, and we are happy to contribute our perspective to the rich collection of views that have been shared with diverse experts here yesterday and today. Today's hearing focuses on the agency's shared commitment to global engagement, a topic that is of critical importance for the success of our mission to protect and promote competition. And on the topic of global engagement, I thought it would be useful and interesting for you to for me to just provide briefly perspectives on the Antitrust Division's experience in the past year working with our international partners. Case cooperation continues to be critical to our enforcement efforts, particularly for mergers notified in other jurisdictions. In the past year, the division cooperated with 14 international agencies on 16 different matters. And as has been true for a number of years, our largest cooperation partners are the competition agencies of the European Commission, Canada, Mexico, Australia, and Brazil. In some cases, the level of cooperation has been extraordinary. For example, in the Bayer-Monsanto merger, our team worked closely with 8 different authorities on the analysis of the merger and the proposed remedies, which, given the nature of agricultural markets, required that we work hand-in-hand with other jurisdictions in fashioning the remedies. Cooperation with several agencies involved weekly calls at staff and management level and the front office coordination on the timing and the remedies. And ultimately, we resolved the matter by requiring one of the largest divestiture remedies in division history. As is obvious from this summary, it is amazing how far we have come in a few short decades. Fortunately, today, we live in a world that has largely embraced market-based economies. With that embrace, the world generally has accepted the need for civil liberties, including fundamental due process. And while we still have a far way to go, it is truly remarkable how far we have come since the end of the Cold War in promoting economic and political freedom. By the mid-90s, as Noah just mentioned, most countries recognized the virtues of market-based economics. And with that recognition came the realization that antitrust laws are crucial to protect the integrity of free markets. 25 years ago, over 60 countries, representing more than 80% of the world's GDP, have enacted antitrust laws. As Assistant Attorney General Ann Bingaman noted, this development represents enormous progress in agreeing on the ideal shape of the playing field. But leveling the field in today's global economy means more than just adopting antitrust laws. It means enforcing them. And today, more than 130 jurisdictions, including every major economy, have adopted competition laws. Even as the world has embraced the need for antitrust laws to promote market integrity, countries enforce their antitrust laws consistent with their own procedural traditions. Today, I want to highlight some of the differences between common law and civil law jurisdictions and between prosecutorial and administrative systems. There are almost twice as many civil law countries than common law traditions in the world, not to mention countries that rely upon Islamic and indigenous law as well. Therefore, one can expect some variation in the ways that different countries enforce their antitrust laws. As Oliver Wendell Holmes said in his famous treatise on the common law, the law embodies the story of a nation's development through many centuries, and it cannot be dealt with as if it contained only the axioms and corollaries of a book of mathematics. There are, however, some axioms that transcend every tradition. Just as every language has a grammar, every legal system has a set of common principles. Despite our many differences, there is unity at the core with respect to fundamental due process and diversity at the margins respecting national traditions of enforcement. While I normally speak about the unity across legal systems when I travel around the world, I want to speak today about our diversity. Let me start by briefly highlighting some features of the antitrust division's operations as an example of a prosecutorial system in a common law jurisdiction, and then contrast that with civil law-based administrative systems. And as you know, the antitrust division is a law enforcement agency responsible for investigating and prosecuting civil and criminal antitrust violations. In civil matters, the division is authorized to bring lawsuits in federal district court to enjoin violations of the antitrust laws. The division does not have the authority to issue by itself an enforceable decision or order to enjoin the conduct at issue. When the division brings a lawsuit to enjoin antitrust violations, a court reviews and bases its decision on the evidence presented by both the division and the defendant. At trial, the division bears the burden of proof and will need to prove its factual allegations by a preponderance of the evidence. Criminal antitrust enforcement investigations typically involve proceedings before a grand jury, which is tasked with deciding whether sufficient grounds for issuing an indictment exist, that is, whether there is probable cause that a crime was committed. When an indictment has been issued, further proceedings are conducted before a federal district court where the division has the role of prosecutor. The defendant has the right to a trial by jury, where the division bears the burden of proving that the allegations are beyond a reasonable doubt. Investigations in an administrative system are conducted fairly similarly to investigations in a prosecutorial system. Agencies typically are authorized to request or seize evidence and information from the parties as well as from the third parties, and the agency bases its decision on the evidence obtained through the investigations. The process leading from investigation to ultimate enforcement decision, however, varies by jurisdiction. In some jurisdictions, parties have the right to request a formal hearing before an enforcement decision is issued, while others simply provide for an opportunity for the parties to submit written statements. However, the process is designed, the key point is that the agency, rather than an independent judge, makes the enforcement decision. Administrative enforcement decisions themselves generally are subject to judicial review. In most jurisdictions, the court reviews the agency's enforcement decision for legal and factual error. While courts conduct their own legal assessment, they tend to review factual findings based on the agency's record and often do not themselves take evidence. The required standard for factual findings varies. Evidence may need to be reliable or consistent or convincing or some combination thereof. In the EU, for example, the European Commission is required to base its decision on convincing evidence or a cogent and consistent body of evidence, which means that the evidence must be factually accurate, reliable, and consistent. However, in administrative law systems, courts tend to defer to antitrust agencies' economic assessment to a significant extent by applying a less rigorous standard of review with respect to economic issues or matters of competition policy. So as you can see, the differences in agency procedures between different enforcement systems can be noteworthy, and these differences also can have a real impact on the decision-making by agencies in their respective systems. So let me just briefly summarize some of those differences with respect to admissibility of evidence, burden of proof, and standard of review. One difference that many observers note is that administrative systems rely on a less rigorous standard with respect to admissibility of evidence. As a prosecutorial agency in a common law jurisdiction, the antitrust division needs to critically consider not only the strength of our economic theories, but also ways to prove our theories at trial through admissible evidence. The rules of evidence thus have a significant impact on the types of evidence on which we rely in building a case. For example, the division needs to consider which company documents or statements by executives of the parties we could introduce without running afoul of the hearsay rules. Similarly, with respect to complaints by customers or competitors, we need to determine to what extent such complaints can be used as evidence at all, as opposed to inadmissible opinions. In an administrative system, agencies typically have much greater leeway as to the types of evidence that they take into account in making their decisions. For example, hearsay rules do not apply in agency proceedings, and courts in civil law jurisdictions usually do not have such rules in place either. Administrative agencies also tend to give more weight to third-party statements, in particular statements of competitors, which, if not inadmissible altogether, are considered with heavy skepticism in prosecutorial systems. While enforcement decisions by administrative agencies are typically subject to review by a court of law, the deference to this agency is different than how courts treat agencies in a prosecutorial system. In a prosecutorial system, the antitrust agency is the plaintiff and has the burden of proving its allegations in court. In an administrative system, in contrast, the agency is the respondent at the review stage. The target of the enforcement actions bear the burden to demonstrate that the agency's decision is based on errors of law or fact. Agencies thus have different perspectives based on their respective burdens in court. In a prosecutorial system, the agency asks itself whether it has sufficient admissible evidence to convince a judge. In an administrative system, in contrast, the agency assesses whether its determination is likely to be overruled on appeal. On the margins, this tends to create a lower threshold for bringing enforcement actions in civil law jurisdictions. Finally, standard of review. In addition to the procedural posture, there are significant differences when it comes to the standard of review. In a prosecutorial system, like the United States, the courts review the allegations of the in the complaint de novo without deference to the agency's views. In essence, the agency is in this same position as any other private plaintiff. The antitrust division, for example, does not receive deference from federal district courts. Under the Chevron doctrine, courts will defer to a reasonable agency interpretation of an ambiguous law that a regulatory agency is tasked to administer. And in our provides that courts will generally defer to a regulatory agency's construction of its own regulations. The antitrust division, however, is a law enforcement agency rather than a regulatory agency, and thus Chevron and Auer do not apply when the division brings a lawsuit to enforce the antitrust laws. In administrative systems, by contrast, courts tend to give at least some deference to the enforcement agency's views or even largely defer to the agency with respect to certain issues, in particular economic assessment and matters of competition policy. In the EU, for example, to the extent that a decision of the European Commission touches on policy matters or entails complex economic assessments, the European courts will conduct only a marginal review, which is limited to checking whether the relevant rules on procedure and on stating reasons have been complied with, whether the facts have been accurately stated, and whether there has been any manifest error of assessment or misuse of powers. So as you can see, there are significant differences between prosecutorial and administrative enforcement systems in civil and common law traditions. And these differences may result in a very different dynamic in enforcement proceedings. In a sense, some characteristics of administrative systems in civil law jurisdictions create incentives in favor of enforcement, while prosecutorial systems impose higher burdens of proof on enforcement agencies. In the United States, decisions to block mergers or enjoin conduct are ultimately up to the courts. Even where the division has significant concerns about harm to competition, as it did with the AT&T and Time Warner merger, the courts are the ultimate decision makers. The benefit, however, of our prosecutorial system is that it requires the division to engage in careful, evidence-based analysis. There is nothing inherently wrong with either approach, but recognizing these differences will help agencies in different systems better understand each other. Indeed, having different systems in place, which at times may reach different results, creates incentives for agencies to critically assess their own work. The key point in all of this, however, is that the differences between various enforcement regimes do not prevent our agencies from reaching consensus on fundamental issues of antitrust enforcement. With respect to antitrust procedures, there is unity at the core and diversity at the margins. We respect both our national traditions and transcendent axioms of procedural fairness. In this respect, I want to close by highlighting the initiatives for the multilateral framework on procedure, which the Antitrust Division has developed with other leading agencies, including the FTC, in our work around the world. This initiative aims to establish fundamental due process norms for antitrust enforcement and to achieve commitments from participating agencies to abide by these norms. The proposal identifies approximately a dozen universal principles that are widely accepted across the globe. The proposal complements these substantive provisions with strong adherence, cooperation, and review mechanisms designed to ensure meaningful compliance. Since we announced our initiative in June of last year, we have had meetings and discussions with over 50 antitrust agencies from around the globe, including agencies from both prosecutorial and administrative systems, from both common law and civil law systems, from both large and established agencies, as well as younger and smaller agencies. We reached broad consensus with all of these agencies on the fundamental due process principles set forth in the proposal. And over the last few months, we have worked closely with our partners to evaluate ways to implement our initiative through the International Competition Network, the ICN. The text that resulted from this process, the Framework on Competition Agency Procedures, incorporates the substantive principles of the MFP and combines these principles with review mechanisms that closely parallel the mechanisms in the MFP. The proposal is expected to be adopted by the ICN in the next few weeks, and we will continue, of course, to promote the MFP in addition to the ICN framework for those agencies that are unable or unwilling to sign the ICN framework. Adopting this text, which will be open to all competition agencies worldwide, both ICN members as well as non-members, will be a remarkable achievement. It will send a clear signal that antitrust agencies across the globe, despite the differences between their proceedings that I discussed earlier, are committed to procedural fairness, and it will reflect international minimum standards that even non-signatories should recognize. Our procedural fairness initiative is only one example of successful international cooperation across different enforcement models and different legal systems, and we have successfully cooperated over decades on numerous enforcement matters with many partner agencies across the world. Better understanding of each other's systems, including our differences, will further improve cooperation and help define common ground. As two eminent antitrust scholars have noted, quote, convergence of procedure, no less than convergence of substantive law, enhances respect, regard, and legitimacy, and thus the sympathy of nations. Thank you very much.